It is, for those of you listening in real time, it's Friday. It's Veterans Day. And, of course, I think we start by saying how much we appreciate the all of the sacrifices that veterans have made for this country over a couple of centuries, Jim Galloway.
Yeah, parents, grandparents, yeah. Brothers, sisters, daughters, sons.
All of them. I also, though, want to point out that it is Veterans Day here at GPB. It's an official holiday. You'd think that we'd have a slow day, but no. There is more news today than we've had all week, and we're going to get into it as we move forward. Jim Galloway, lead political writer for the AJC. I'm glad you could be here today.
Happy to be here.
Wednesdays and Sundays. So give us your preview of Sunday.
Well, I talked to two ex-mayors of Atlanta this week, Sam Massell and Shirley Franklin. What they said is going to be in the Sunday column. You got to read what Shirley Franklin says.
Oh, okay.
It's going to roil some waters.
I wish I had my calendar in front of me. She's going to be here on the show in about a week or so, actually, to talk about the mayor's race, among other things.
Ooh, okay. Well, the Sunday column's a preview.
All right, terrific. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that. Loretta Lepore is here. She's does work as a Republican political consultant. She worked as co-chair of the Carly Fiorina presidential campaign. But what I always neglect to say is that, of course, you were in the leadership on the staff of Governor Sonny Perdue when he was in office. You were his communications director, right?
I was his press secretary, yes. It was an honor to serve.
Okay. And Representative Mary Margaret Oliver from DeKalb County, Decatur, is back with us again. Jim Galloway points out that Veterans Day is officially tomorrow. It's being recognized today by many of us who are dealing with the official holiday today.
Thank you for the invitation. My dad was a World War II vet.
Important
in our house.
So was mine.
Important in our home.
Where did he serve? In what service?
He was in the Navy, and he was mainly on pharmacy supply ships because he was a pharmacist.
Okay. Where was your dad?
Dad flew the hump.
I don't know what that means.
He was in the India-Burma-China theater of flying over the Himalayas.
Army Air Corps.
Mm-hmm.
My grandfather was Marine, stationed in the Pacific.
My dad was in the Navy. He was served on a refrigerated cargo ship in the South Pacific. So, all right, we've all got our military families accounted for today.
I think Loretta's the generation ahead of us, though, now.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and start taking a look at some of the really important news that we want to cover today. Jim Galloway, yesterday, as if Republicans hadn't been dealing with enough this week, a woman named Lee Korfman was reported in the Washington Post to have told them that when she was 14 years old and Roy Moore was an assistant district attorney, a 32-year-old assistant district attorney, he befriended her when her mother was in court on a custody hearing that involved Lee Korfman. He said, "Let me take care of your daughter while you go into the courthouse room. She shouldn't have to hear this." And asked for her phone number, according to Lee Korfman's account, and began trying to date her. It gets more salacious. The second time they were together, it got
clothes were removed, yeah.
Yeah. So this is a bombshell, of course, hitting us with the Senate race in Alabama coming to a close on December 12th. And let's start by listening to how they handled this story in Washington. There was pretty quick reaction from Republican leaders. You're going to hear first from Mitch McConnell, of course, the majority leader in the Senate, and then Alabama senior senator Richard Shelby.
If these allegations are true, Roy Moore should step aside for all the obvious reasons. A very disturbing allegation.
It's a devastating, nasty story. If the revelations, if that's true, I don't believe there'd be any place for him in the U.S. Senate.
Richard Shelby and Mitch McConnell. Then the White House reacted. Sarah Huckabee Sanders talked about it on Air Force One during the trip, the Asian trip. And Kellyanne Conway, who stayed behind, repeated pretty much the White House line on this.
We need to listen to both sides, but at the same time, that hypothetical would be disqualifying for anyone in public office.
All right. Jim, there seems to be a split in reaction to this, although we can talk about the Washington response. It gets a little more nuanced. But in Washington, you know, a hesitant condemnation, a qualified condemnation in Montgomery, they're cheering him on.
Right, right. In D.C., it's the if true scenario. And this is what's amazing on this story is just the tribalism that's evident here. The Republican tribalism that you can have an older man going after a 14-year-old girl, age of consent was 16 at the time, still is. And you're guilty of at least a misdemeanor if you are older than 19, in that kind of relationship, and yet you have a hardcore Republican a population that says this is not disqualifying.
Yeah,
I'm just flabbergasted. I really am.
So let's start with the Washington side of this, Mary Margaret. Here's what I don't quite understand: the if true line. I mean, this isn't a court of law. There's not going to be a trial, at least that we know of at this point. And yet, Republican leaders in D.C., they somehow seem to think that they need further evidence of the truth of this to really cut off Roy Moore.
I spent some time with the research. 1 in 4 girls are molested, 1 in 6. I've been involved on the General Assembly in the last several years on the extension of statute of limitations about being able to prosecute these cases outside the age of majority plus certain number of years. You have 30 corroborating witnesses from reliable reporters, and yet the Republican leadership in Washington feels some way to provide some cover, some contingency. They'll use the word devastating, they'll use the word unqualified, but they don't want to say it's true. And they don't want to assume that he will not be a colleague of theirs very soon. I think the word devastating story is the most accurate description.
We should point out, Loretta, that the Washington Post also, that Lee Korfman is the most dramatic story in a very sad way. But they talked to a few other women, who also said that as teenagers, a little bit older, Judge Moore, much older, had attempted to date them, and they found that uncomfortable. So the Washington Post has more than one account here. What do you make of this, if it turns out to be true, line of the Republicans?
Well, I think we don't have time to find out whether it's true or not. To your point, this isn't going to be taken up in a court of law before Election Day. And so, you know, and the tribalism, I think, while to Jim's point, you know, his reference of tribalism by Republicans in Washington, I think that they are all speaking from the same hymnal. I think outside of Washington, however, you see a breakdown with Republicans where you see more condemnation coming from Republicans speaking to the inappropriate nature of this and the need for him to step down. You know, he's not going to step down. You know, he doesn't.
He'll probably get elected.
He will probably get elected, and he is not a person who the Republican Party. Let's face it. There were a lot of folks in the Republican Party, including Mitch McConnell, who worked against him, then endorsed his opponent, and they said that was an establishment versus the outsider. That's not the case with Roy Moore. You know, Roy Moore, he marches to his own drum. He has his own ideology. He runs under the banner of Republican, but he does not share necessarily. And I think the concern has been by Republicans in Washington that even when he gets there, he's not going to operate within the caucus as a member of the caucus.
So while individual Republican leaders hedged their bets on Roy Moore to an extent, two things. Number one, there was an official position taken now by the NRSC, the National Republican Senate Campaign Committee, which has said it's cutting off any funding from the official Senate reelection effort for Roy Moore. He's out of their
picture.
Right,
you've had the staff for Senator Mike Lee of Utah say that they're asking that the Moore campaign remove his endorsement and all signs of his endorsement.
And Mitt Romney came out unequivocally saying he should step down.
Marching to his own drum is way too charitable a characterization for. He is an unlawful, removed from the bench, I don't care what the law is, homosexual people or criminals. That is not marching to your own drum. That is an unqualified, unacceptable leader in any political party.
But right now, what I think is troubling Senate Republicans, in Mitch McConnell in D.C. in particular, is that they've got a two-seat majority.
They've got
a tax bill to pass by the end of this year.
Well, that's an immediate concern. But I think they're also concerned that they have a bigger problem, that if he does make his way there, it's a long-term problem for the Republican Party.
It's an incredible. He's the poster boy for 2018.
Yeah, and the magnitude of what that will do within the Republican Party will be significant.
And how did we get there? How did we get to the spot where someone molesting a 14-year-old child with 30 corroborating witnesses, and Republican leaders had to know about these rumors? I'm asking that question. I assume they did. That this person is now a problem for everybody in Alabama and the United States.
Let me ask this, and then I want to turn to the reaction in Montgomery and in the state of Alabama beyond Montgomery. We don't have proof of a number of the claims that have been made about sexual abuse by some Hollywood stars. It isn't as if we have unequivocal evidence of some of the accusations, and yet the Hollywood community has very quickly acted on any number of these people without saying, gee, if it turns out to be true, we're canceling his contract. We're not going to release his picture, Jim.
Well, number one, I would say they were very late in coming on board.
Well,
there.
That may very well be.
Very late.
But of course they
decades
were. But
late.
Of course they were. Nevertheless,
things that pains me, and pains me a great deal, I'm serious about this, to look around my colleagues who are unemployable in any corporation. Donald Trump would be unemployable at Exxon. What he says, how he behaves. The corporate mentality is very, very strong right now that we will not accept the images of these behaviors out in the public. It's not in our interest to do so.
John Archibald is a columnist for Alabama.com, which is a statewide online news service. And he writes this in today's edition. We don't know if Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore creeped on underage girls 40 years ago, as the Washington Post outlined. We can't know, and we don't know if it will affect the December 12th election. But here's what we can know, is that the talk of morality and purity and biblical superiority isn't worth the backdoor leavings of Roy Moore's horse, Sassy. The indignation and upright outrage by those who see a Roy Moore victory as a comeuppance to the sinful is as morally bankrupt as anything Moore rails against. And he talks about what we started to, Jim. Some of the responses from Alabama GOP leaders have been staggering.
Yes, you had the auditor, state auditor, last name of Ziegler, Jim Ziegler said that, Mary was a teenager too when Joseph married her, and they did pretty well. I think he dismissed it as not illegal or but a little bit unusual.
Yeah, he said, what's the big deal? If this happened when it did. Let's do this, if we can take a moment. The Washington Post went out into Alabama yesterday and began talking to voters about their response to this story. And we won't play all of it, but we'll give credit to the Washington Post. They put it up on their website. Let's just listen to some of the voices of Alabama voters as they reacted to Roy Moore.
Obviously, the allegations are disturbing, but we don't know the whole facts until the facts come out. Until this is fully investigated, I do not believe that people should make any decisions about Judge Roy Moore, period. Particularly because if he's not elected to the Senate, what you're looking at is a Democrat in the Senate, and you're looking at a president of the United States that's going to be impossible to pass any type of meaningful legislation.
I think if Roy Moore had any amount of real dignity about himself, he would withdraw from the race.
It's pure allegation. It's someone that's trying to cook up a story. Now, any allegations that are made would not change my perception of Roy Moore.
Shock, disbelief, a little nauseated, very, very disappointed. The news changed my perspective of him 100%. I've always thought of him as a good politician on our side for the people, all about us. I'll never want to have anything to do with his beliefs, thoughts, leadership, nothing. I'm totally disgusted.
Loretta, two of those four sound bites support what you and Jim Galloway basically just said, which is there's no reason in the world Roy Moore won't be elected on December 12th.
Roy Moore has had a steady stream of support. Look, I mean, I think to Mary Margaret's point, he was removed from the Supreme Court, and he was but my point is, he was reelected after he was removed, right? So there are these diehards, and then you have a portion of the electorate there that I think, to the last woman that spoke, that it just made her sick to her stomach. And I think for probably the majority of Americans outside of Alabama are sickened. And you know, the objectification of women, young girls, young boys, 4 years ago or 40 years ago is wrong. It is just flat out wrong.
And yet, Mary Margaret, we cannot seem to get a Republican Party united around that very simple and straightforward message that Loretta just gave us.
My mind goes to the families whose children have been victimized, and I know too many of them. And the testimony at our Capitol, our Georgia Capitol, that has taken action to extend the statute of limitations for prosecution of child molestation. Those stories are too real to me and too real to many of the voters for any of these allegations, the way they've been corroborated, the way they've come forward, to not be respected.
Jim, we already learned on Tuesday that in the Virginia governor's race, if we look at exit polling, that there were any number of women who deserted the Republican Party to vote for a Democratic candidate for governor, put them over the top, essentially. How do you think this, in the long run, plays out in terms of Republicans' efforts to keep Republicans on their side?
Republican women on their side.
Yes.
I think that they will be the swing voters in 2018. I think they're the ones. And this is actually in Georgia. It's going to make the two Stacey's race a lot more interesting, because I think those white Republican women are gettable at this point. And so the strategy between Evans and Abrams over do you go intensity in the Democratic ranks, or do you try to reach out toward the middle becomes more important. But one thing I'd like to just it strikes me on a national level, Bill, and I don't want to overgeneralize this, but you see something very interesting happening within ideology over everything debate within the Republican ranks, and that is your Western Mormon ranks are pulling away from the rest of the party. The Mitt Romneys, the Jeff Flakes, even the Mike Lees.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very interesting split that's happening.
On the other hand,
character matters.
Yes, but
character matters.
Well, but on the other hand, the Alabama Christian Coalition, came out and said they think Roy Moore should be the next senator from Alabama. They're not going to let these accusations stand in the way. So you go both ways in terms of how the religious are dealing with this.
No, but what I'm saying is, but what I'm saying is the Latter-day Saints are behaving in a wholly different manner than Southern Baptists.
Right, exactly.
I've spent a little time since Tuesday, Virginia, trying to read the analysis that came from each of the Stacys. Each of the Stacys have made a good argument that the vote emphasizes the movement of white voters, men and women, and does emphasize the surging of white vote versus the surging of black vote. I think that deserves a whole lot of attention. The political science of those two strategies may not be proven by Virginia, given it doesn't have the size of the black population, Hispanic population that Georgia does, but it's a fascinating example to study.
All right, I've got to get to a break in a second here, but two quick notes. Our two senators, David Perdue, has essentially said the same thing that many on the Hill are saying, which is these are disturbing, we'll see if they're true. Johnny Isaacson has not yet been reached on this subject, and we'll see what he might say. Meanwhile, the National Review, a conservative publication, has already said the allegations are credible, and they've said that Moore should drop out. As we take a break, there's this. Roy Moore has begun fundraising around the Washington Post reporting, and here's what here's just a little of what the material they're putting out says. The Obama-Clinton machine's liberal media lapdogs just launched the most vicious and nasty round of attacks against me I've ever faced. He goes on and says he won't get into the details of these filthy and sleazy attacks, but he says the forces of evil will lie, cheat, steal, even inflict physical harm if they believe it will silence and shut up Christian conservatives like you and me. Loretta, I'll bet she's going to raise a lot of money around that message.
Perhaps in Alabama.
Well, yes.
You know, I don't think that he's going to get a whole lot of outside money because I think there are many people that are going to find that just as offensive as people within the state that might adhere to it and see it as a rallying cry. I think that, you know, Christian conservatives and even some of the Southern Baptists. I had lunch with someone who's a Southern Baptist. We talked about this issue over lunch. They don't think Roy Moore is in the right. They think he ought to step down too. So, you know, what happens in Alabama is oftentimes unique to Alabama, and I don't think that we can assume that Christians at large, Southern Christians, or any particular religious organization condones this or thinks that Roy Moore ought not sit down. In terms of the media, I will say that I think this is a false narrative that Roy Moore is running, because in every media report that we have seen in the last couple of months around sexual impropriety and unwanted sexual advances toward women has borne out to be true.
Did Steve Bannon say the exact same thing?
Yeah, Bannon is out there saying this is the Bezos, Amazon, right. Washington Post conspiracy against Roy Moore.
Once again,
he points to the Hollywood tape of last
Hollywood
year.
Access.
That's right, which he also said was he didn't call it fake news, but he said it was perpetrated by the same people perpetrating
Bezos,
this.
Amazon's crowd, and the Republican leadership challenge is whether they're going to accept, support in any way, give credence to that particular theory.
All right. Well, that election is December 12th. We'll have plenty of time to talk about how it seems to affect the outcome. It is certainly true that Democrats are going to now, national Democrats, look at trying to put more money into Doug Jones' effort to upset Roy Moore. But we'll watch that as the next couple of weeks go by. We got to get our break in. This is Political Rewind. We're going to come back. We've got some interesting state news about one of the two Stacys.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, a major contributor to the economic and cultural vitality of downtown Atlanta and the Metro Atlanta area.
We're back on Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, Loretta Lepore, Representative Mary Margaret Oliver are in the studio today. Let's start. Stacey Abrams made a couple of headlines this week, Jim. In one case, first of all, she's received another endorsement. Gabrielle Giffords, the former member of Congress who was shot in a horrible public incident as she was out campaigning on a Saturday morning, and has since become a really leading advocate of increased gun safety measures, gun control measures. Her organization has now endorsed Stacey Abrams. And first of all, tell me, it's interesting because, of course, we know that when he ran for governor as a Democrat, Jason Carter ran in some ways with having voted for expanding gun rights.
All right, right, yeah, yeah. You still had Democrats who believed in the power of getting that NRA endorsement, or at least avoiding the NRA opposition. So there are two strains in this, in that Stacey Abrams continues to rack up the national endorsements. She's really running a nationally backed campaign, and this is just one more. And then it's the changing attitude on the Democratic side toward guns and assault weapons and the excesses of armed citizens.
There are those that make an argument that Jason Carter really hurt himself by being the NRA Democrat in his race, and they have some political science and some numbers about that. You know, there's a bill carried by a Republican, House Bill 541, that'll clarify, make sure that those convicted of domestic violence do not get guns. And after the Texas massacre, less than two weeks ago, I'm very interested in how the Republicans vote against that carried by a Republican sponsor. Clearly, the mood of the people is for more protections and more safety and some positive effort to protect people.
Gabby Giffords' husband, of course, is astronaut Mark Kelly, whose twin brother, Scott Kelly, was in our studios yesterday. He spent a year on the International Space Station and came in to talk about that experience. And while he was here, we talked a bit about his brother and sister-in-law's gun efforts, and here's what he said. Do you participate in any of those activities yourself?
Not in any kind of formal way. I mean, that's their issue. That's their cause. I have my own opinions. One of which is clearly we need to do something, right? Because what we're doing doesn't really work. So something should be done. Otherwise, people are going to still be killed in this country with guns on a regular basis. So. You know, I'm just shocked that our government basically has chosen to just absolutely ignore this issue and do nothing about it.
You're going to hear more of that conversation. That's a two-way street conversation, really fascinating. Loretta, what's your take on where, how do you get ahead in this state as a candidate for statewide office if you want expanded gun control efforts?
Well, I think that, when we look at the state, and I hate to use this term, but when we look at this two Georgia kind of situation, when you're looking at Metro, and even when you look at some of the recent legislation around campus carry, for example, there were numerous legislators within the Metro region that voted against that bill. And where you're seeing that breakdown is in Metro. There is less and less appetite for gun leniency, right? They thought, when I was a candidate myself, I was speaking to Republicans, and when I went door knocking in the Metro region, most of their concerns were about the expansion of gun rights. They thought it had gone too far. Georgia had gone too far. And that was a couple of years ago. And so now I think you see an expansion of that, where people are looking at what's happening and saying, look, something has to be done. We can't just continue to let the current state of existence occur.
And yet, today, the Abrams campaign this morning tweeted out a video of Stacey Abrams speaking in front of I think it was a union-backed group of huntsmen explaining her expertise with firearms, being taught how to use a shotgun, declaring herself a student of skeet shooting. So there's she's, you know, there's moderation here too.
Are
you?
It's not moderation, Jim. It's a political strategy to advise the Georgia listeners that people who say they want more gun safety, and not the word control, but gun safety, are people who are familiar with guns. One, I'm the author, as you may know, primary sponsor of the ban on assault weapons. And the first thing that the opponents of my bill say to me, the first thing, after they get through some things that aren't printable, they say, you don't know anything about guns. What Stacey Abrams is communicating is that she shot a gun. I, Mary Margaret Oliver, shot a gun. I have had gun lessons. But that is one of the strategies that you have to educate the public about, who want more safety, who want more assurance, that whether it's Stacey Abrams or Mary Margaret Oliver, we're not ignorant about the joys of hunting. We're not ignorant about the sport. We're not ignorant about the machinery. In fact, Stacey Abrams knowing more about guns makes her, in the view of the voter, my opinion, more credible.
With an election year legislative session coming up, do you expect there to be any legislation in any direction on guns in the legislature this year? Or is it going to be something that everybody would just as soon push away from?
I expect 541 to pass. I don't expect my assault weapon bill to pass, as fervent and strong as I am for it. But 541, that says that individuals convicted of domestic violence should not be allowed to have guns, will pass. It's federal law already.
Okay. We'll watch that bill as it comes up. Let's take a look at another issue that Stacey Abrams has made a little news about. She has told out on the campaign trail a story that's very touching, and really, we hate to hear that this may have happened to her. Let's listen to the way she told this story when she was one of with Stacey Evans in a forum at the Georgia Win List.
When I was 17, I graduated as a valedictorian of my high school. And at the time, the governor, Governor Zell Miller, would invite everyone to come to the governor's mansion, invite those valedictorians. So my mom and dad got dressed up. I put on my nicest Sunday dress and a pair of heels, and I hate wearing heels. But we took that bus to West Paces Ferry. And when my parents and I got off the bus and we walked up to the gates, the guard wouldn't let us in. He said, I just saw y'all getting off that bus. You don't belong here. This is a private event. And my mom and dad tried to explain, no, this is our daughter. She has worked hard. She's invited inside. And he told me I didn't belong. I'm running for governor because we have to open those gates wide for everyone. We have to open the gates of the governor's mansion wide for everyone.
Jim, you wrote about this got a phone call from Governor Zell Miller's former chief of staff, Keith Mason.
Right, right. Well, but before I did that, this was I think on a Monday. On Tuesday morning, I called Abrams' campaign and I asked them to finish that story. Did she ever get into the governor's mansion? And she said, yes, she got into the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I did get a field of call from Keith Mason, who was Zell's chief of staff back in the day, who was quite disturbed by it. And we've kind of let it go then. And then last week, the Abrams campaign put it on video and sent it out via Twitter,
yeah.
A more fulsome version of that, which also included that, yes, her parents did get in there. And I used Keith's statement that just said basically he considered that an attack on Zell's policy and his heart at the time, and that didn't represent where he was.
You quote Keith Mason as saying, "I am shocked to hear Representative Abrams say she was treated with disrespect and hostility. I was Governor Zell Miller's chief of staff in his first term. I can tell you he would have never tolerated such conduct." And of course, those of us who were around back in those days, and would have occasionally go to events at the governor's mansion, always saw a very diverse crowd. I mean, we saw that starting with Joe Frank Harris, who preceded Zell Miller. So let me ask you, both you, Loretta, and you, Mary Margaret, Stacey Abrams we've always known her to be a person of integrity. So there's no reason to think that she is spinning this story and trying to play a race card. No reason to suspect that. But there does seem to be, you know, the question is her 17-year-old memory, you know, how do we deal with this?
I take her at her word, and I personally, going through many security gates in the courthouses and in obviously the Capitol, many times have walked through with an African-American who has been stopped and I've not. That happens on a fairly routine basis. And I don't ever, in those instances when I'm stopped and the guy next to me is not. I mean, security is just a very unpleasant experience, and it is more unpleasant for some people other than others.
Jen, let me just add here that I did get a statement from Abrams' campaign yesterday. In which she said that this is she thinks the encounter was pretty much a bad experience with one individual, which was overcome at that level and didn't move up the chain of command.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. That's my experience.
Right.
When I am bringing somebody with me to the Capitol, or with I'm with other legislators of African American, I think it is inexperience. The guards know most of us, don't know all of us. And it's an easy mistake to make, and it feels very badly, feels terrible when it happens.
It is, of course, Loretta, and that's, I'm glad you got that clarification from the Abrams campaign, because there's no reason to doubt her story. But Loretta, this does remind us that the Democratic race for governor is between an African-American woman and a white woman, and they're appealing to very different constituencies, at least as their base right now.
They are, and I would say that ideologically they're appealing to different bases. You know, it's not just by race. And I've had the good fortune of working with Keith Mason, and I know him to be a very deliberative, thoughtful person, and the fact that he has spoken out voluntarily on this, it must be an issue that has really struck at his core, and he wanted to set the record straight. I have no doubt about that. And, you know, as Mary Margaret said, I mean, I've been to the mansion a number of times, even when I was working for the governor, and I would get stopped by the guard at the gate. And it doesn't feel good when you get stopped.
Our listeners cannot see you right now, but you're a somewhat suspicious-looking person.
Right, but I mean that. Well, my point is that they are diligent in the work they're doing.
Yeah.
These guards, they are, you know, sometimes overzealous in what they're doing in upholding their role and responsibility of protecting the governor. So I don't doubt Stacey Abrams' story, nor do I doubt Keith Mason's conviction.
It does strike me that the larger, what she's talking about in a larger sense is absolutely correct.
Absolutely. If I had a dime for every time a bailiff in the courtroom had told me, you can't sit there, that's only for lawyers, that still happens. And I could fault myself for that. Maybe I'm not, you know, don't have my high heels on that day. But it's something that feels badly.
Well, what I'm talking about now is the symbolism that Stacey Abrams was saying, we need to open government wide to people of diversity.
Well,
and that's really the point is.
And to that point, I mean, Keith Mason kind of laid out what Zell had accomplished during the 90s in bringing African Americans into the government. And the Abrams campaign said, yeah, that's kind of the point, that Zell was still having to act in the 1990s.
Yeah. Let's move on. I'll tell you what. Let's get a break in. When we come back, Jim Galloway, let's talk about the cheerleaders and their kneeling up at Kennesaw State University. There's been a development both at KSU and in the whole university system on this. You're listening to Political Rewind.
A new group has formed to support military veterans running for Congress from either party.
It wasn't long ago that Congress was over 70% veterans. Now today it's at a historic low. It's less than 20%. And we don't think it's a coincidence that Congress is so dysfunctional.
I'm Kelly McEvers, running Vets for Congress in 2018. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Catch All Things Considered 4 till 7 this afternoon on GPB.
Jim Galloway, being a loyal listener to GPB Radio, listened to the promo that I recorded that we aired, in which I said there's been a change in the policy of cheerleaders kneeling at Kennesaw State University. And you pointed out to me that I got that a little wrong. You're not the first person to tell me I'm wrong, Jim. I want you to know. But
You weren't wrong. You were just a narrow, little bit too narrow, narrow. Too narrow.
So tell us, in fact, it is certainly true that the cheerleaders at KSU are going to be allowed back on the field or back in a court when the basketball season is underway and will be free to kneel if they choose to express themselves.
Right, and KSU president Sam Mullins made that announcement a few days ago. What wasn't reported at that point was that there had been an October 10th letter from the AG's office to the University System of Georgia explaining why you couldn't command students to stand to attention during the national anthem.
Free speech.
And it was written by a fellow you and I know from the AG's office, Russ Willard.
Right.
Very good attorney, and his line was that to require somebody to salute or stand would constitute compelled speech and would be constitutionally infirm.
Yeah, the regents did, or that letter did, and you'll tell me which. The statement in there is we do wish. We like people to honor the national anthem. Oh, yeah. We don't want them to do it, but they're free to do it.
Now, General Carr's letter is very clear. I strongly support the freedom of speech. Believes the courts likely would deem that public university kneeling is protected by that. As much as I disagree, as much as I think that they shouldn't kneel, he was very careful to state his personal view. Attorney General Carr's, who I'm talking about, versus what the law simply is.
Loretta, is this another example where the president has stirred things up and here it comes home to us right here in Georgia at a university that is growing by leaps and bounds, both in terms of total population, in terms of prestige across the state, and suddenly it's embroiled in a hot button controversy like this?
Well, yes and no. So I think that the president's commentary and involvement in issues like this certainly brings these issues to the fore. Were they non-existent prior to the president? They were absolutely there.
You're right.
So he's just kind of cast doused some of these brush fires and made them into bigger, more visible conversations. And not necessarily bad ones. I mean, I think that when we're talking about free speech rights, when we're talking about social justice, when we're talking about problems that have been afflicting our country for some time and we continue to kind of sweep under the carpet, I don't think it's such a bad thing to begin to have a substantive, productive dialogue about some of these issues.
I think Chris Carr's letter did that. I think he raised the debate. What the president does is says, I don't respect the law. That's what the president's tone is. Laughing stock, joke. He does not respect the rule of law. He does not elevate the discussion to an intellectually honest discussion about our values. He disrespects the law.
And I will tell you what I do like about this, and I have to give Chris Carr some credit, and back in the day, Nathan Deal and Sam Mullins. I mean, this kind of played out like the gay marriage decision with the U.S. Supreme Court, where you had a whole lot of bombast on one side, but once the law was made clear, Republican leadership in the state said, this is what we're going to do.
Okay.
Oh, that's a very interesting story. Attorney General Olins, the governor's office, leaders of the judiciary, I give a lot of credit to the probate court counsel, were meeting weeks before the Obergefell decision came out. They were on the phone directly, immediately. They handled that with
going
real
back
skill.
To, they're talking about how the state handled the
2015
real
yeah.
skill.
All right. Mary Margaret, let me throw this out to you first because it's going to happen in your front yard down at the legislature. We know as a result of Tuesday's election where suddenly Democrats challenged in legislative districts that have been safe for Republicans for a very long time. That's shaken things up quite a bit. Your party is saying we are now going to get out there. We're going to field candidates everywhere we can. And at the same time, your Republican colleagues downtown are looking at ways to block everything you can do, including at least one effort to turn special elections, should they come up, into party primaries instead of so-called jungle primaries.
I was elected in a special election, my first election, so I'm very sensitive to this. I think that anything the Republicans do in the 2018, whether it's gerrymandering, whether it's change the rules on special election, they're going to be sued immediately. Is that exactly adding to the fire that they want to have as their face to the voter in 2018 is that we want to repress your vote. We don't like what you're thinking now. I think that's very dangerous territory for Republicans.
The Republican leadership is already saying, Loretta, they may in fact change the boundaries of some of the districts where they think Democrats could challenge and might have an opportunity to win. And for those people who think that you can only redistrict every 10 years with a census, that's wrong. You can introduce a reapportionment bill at any moment.
Yeah, I think I agree with Mary Margaret in the respect that the optics of redrawing lines in an election year is not a good thing. It sends the message that you're disenfranchising voters, you're manipulating the system. It is not a good move from an optics perspective. I think some of the races the GOP lost this cycle, and I have to admit I called that one wrong. I didn't think they were going to pick up those seats, but they did. I think that they now have to do the work of earning them back in the primary next year. That's what they have to. That's what the GOP has to focus on.
What's interesting is that when Roy Barnes was defeated in 2002, we all pointed to the flags. We pointed to the teachers. But Republicans said that the gerrymandering that his administration did in the years previous was really one of the prime motivating factors for Republicans.
Yeah.
And it's something that they probably need to remember.
That's a great point.
Because
Roy Barnes and his people were brutal in the way they redrew lines.
And it
when
brought
he was
me
governor.
Back to politics. I was out of politics, and they redrew a multi-member district that the court threw out immediately. So all of that is part of our history. What's interesting to me is that I know for a fact that in the 2017 session, when they were looking at the lines for Rick Golic and Brian Strickland and one in Gwinnett, that the lawyers doing the national litigation on gerrymandering were in the Capitol looking at every amendment.
All right. I want to give you a breaking news story. Jeff Sessions they've now in the House Intelligence Committee set a date for Attorney General Sessions to testify. It'll be on November 30th. And one of the reasons that's particularly important, he was already going to be at the House Judiciary Committee, but now the Intelligence Committee, which is investigating Russian collusion, is going to have him. And that's going to be particularly important because a few items that have come to light suggest that he may not have been quite as forthcoming about knowing about contacts with Russia among members of the Trump campaign as possible. So that just came in. I want to turn to something else, if I may, and it's kind of a cultural note here. The Country Music Awards, CMA show was the other night, and I want to play for you. I will say right now, our producer Tom Faust is a country music addict. He loves country music. He wanted to play for you all a little duet that Carrie Underwood and Brad Paisley did. Let's listen quickly, and then let's talk about why it kind of matters.
He writes, Little Bob Corker, NFL, and Kofi.
Kofi!
Kofefi?
Kofefi?
Kofefi.
Kofefi.
Fefi.
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 Kissing tight.
Thank you. And it's fun to watch, yeah, that's for sure, till little Rocket Man starts a nuclear war, and then
maybe next time he'll think before he tweets.
Okay, so a little fun play on Trump's tweeting. But here's why I think it's interesting, Jim. We think of Nashville and the country music community as being the fundamentally conservative people of the nation who, in most cases, would think Donald Trump was their guy. And when the CMAs play something like this, you wonder, is there a little bit of a shift? It's one thing if Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers mock him, but when it's country stars?
Yeah, this is a Nashville that couldn't tolerate the Dixie Chicks.
Yeah.
And it's generational. And of course, I went to Vanderbilt, and I was in the real Ryman Auditorium many at nights as they were closing down. Working class people need a help, need a hand, care about their country, and we have a generational shift in country music.
But
Well, I think, too, that they did it in a good-natured, healthy way. It wasn't biting. You know, they do have they are musicians trying to also cater to their audience, after all.
But that's my point.
They have to,
but that's my point.
You know,
is their audience pro-Trump, or are they starting to move
away
a little bit?
Well, I don't know that they were being anti-Trump necessarily, but they certainly were poking fun. And it was a different tonality, most definitely, from some of the other award shows.
That makes sense. And the president probably loved it because we know what a great sense of humor he has.
But to Loretta's point, it didn't have that self-righteous.
No, yes, of course.
It wasn't lecturing. It was making fun.
All right, you got me. It was an excuse to have fun with a jingle. Okay. Well, real quick, we're almost out of time. But Jim, there interesting interview that David Perdue gave, talking about he gave a Newsmakers interview in which he talked about how disaffected he is, how disenchanted he is with the leadership. That's not new. But there was a question raised about whether he himself, if he doesn't like Mitch McConnell, might he be in line to look at becoming majority leader?
You did have a little kind of a blip, I think late September, early October, when Jenny Beth Martin, who heads up Tea Party Patriots, said she wouldn't mind David Perdue taking Mitch McConnell's place. But here's the problem. You've got a Georgia's junior senator has to decide what his future is going to be.
Right.
There have been mumblings that he may have a presidential or vice presidential run in him. But if he goes into Senate leadership, he gives that up.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll watch that. One other quick note. We made note on Wednesday of some of the interesting little races around the country interesting new things happened. We did not realize when we did that the city of Doraville elected to its city council a transgender woman, the first transgender woman to win elective office in the state of Georgia. So, Steffi Kuntz, congratulations on being a groundbreaker. We are out of time for today's show, and I'm really glad, Mary Margaret Oliver, you could be here. Loretta Lepore, we always love having you in as well. Jim Galloway, thank you. You'll be back on Monday, where I'm sure the weekend will bring us many new things to discuss. Let me just take a minute with the time I have left to tell you a little bit about a two-way street that, if you didn't get to hear it, it airs initially on Thursdays at 2, but we rebroadcast Two-Way Street on Sundays at 11 in the morning. And I want to call this one to your attention especially. It's a conversation with Gary Wills. Gary Wills is one of the great American thinkers about history and especially about religion. He's written about Christianity, about his own religion of Catholicism for many decades. He's a Pulitzer Prize winner. But Gary Wills, in his late 60s, realized one day he had never bothered to read the Quran. And so he did. He sat down and read the book and has now published a book called What the Quran Meant and Why It Matters. And I would really encourage you to listen to the show because it'll give you an entirely different take on what the Quran really says. And afterwards, come to our Facebook page and add your comments to the many people who have already begun saying how surprised they've been about what they learned listening to Gary Wills. That's Sunday at 11 a.m., Two-Way Street. And then we'll be back here at 2 on Monday. In the meantime, everybody have a great weekend. We'll see you then.